gave Sargon a flapping signal to get on with the show. Sargon slapped the release, and the big lever lit up. He hauled down on it with both hands. Flashers spun, sirens went off, but very quickly that sound died away to nothing as the doors split open to reveal a brilliant mass of diamond-like stars in a river of blackness. The air burst out of the chamber, and we couldn't hear anything other than our whistling suits and the clanking of our boots. The heavies had all locked themselves down with magnetics to resist the rush of released gas. But the light troops, they'd been given no such instructions. They rose up like a flock of birds and were sucked out into open space. Some of them spun and thumped into the doors on the way out. I winced a little, knowing all too well what it was like to fight a battle with cracked ribs. "You could have played that better, Harris," I complained.
"That's right, sir. If my commander had..."
I cut him off from tactical chat. There was no point in having the entire unit listen to their officers bitch at each other at the very outset of a battle. Clanking to the edge of the sally port, I stood there peering out into the starlit scene. Damn if Harris hadn't vanished already. I could make out the ship he was heading toward, but it was pretty small and at least 4 kilometers away. "Okay, when Harris sends back the go message, we're launching next," I told Toro and her heavies.
"Why don't you send Leeson's team next?" Toro asked. "Harris might not be able to cut through on his own. Leeson has all the best techs and weaponeers."
"Hey, hey, hey," Leeson said, stomping forward to join us on a broad tongue of metal that stuck out into the void. "We got a plan. Let's stick to that plan." I thought about what Toro was saying. Sure, she was trying to get out of stepping into this meat grinder early, but she did have a point. If the problem was that Harris couldn't break in, then Leeson's people were the next logical choice. "Toro is right," I said. "I don't want any downtime if we have to back Harris up technically. Leeson, form up on the ready line. You'll jump the moment I give you the signal." Leeson shot Toro a sour glance, but I pretended not to notice. Muttering, he ordered his platoon up to the line, and they stood there, looking worried. I couldn't blame them for that.
"Message coming in from Harris, sir," I heard Natasha tell me. "He sounds like he's in trouble."
"Damn it, pipe it through. I'm not getting anything." In that moment, I realized I'd left Harris on mute. Feeling a shock of guilt, I adjusted that and heard him shout in my ear.
"By all that's holy, McGill," he roared. "Can't you see we're under fire? We're pinned on the starboard wing of this little ship."
Zooming in with my optics, I saw his men clinging to the sleek blood-worlder ship. It was about the size of a lifter, but built with a narrower profile and delta-shaped wings.
"Leeson," I boomed. "That's your signal. Go, go, go!"
Startled, the auxiliary platoon jumped. At least none of them banged into anything. They leaped out into open space and used their tiny steering jets to home in on the target ship. I grimaced as I watched sparks flying and nailing Harris's troops. They didn't stand a chance. There wasn't really anywhere to hide, and they were getting pasted on that wing.
"Toro, ready line. We jump in 10 seconds. 10, 9.
I jumped on 3. I don't know why. Maybe I felt bad about letting Harris sit out there under fire without a hope.
"Scatter, scatter!"
I ordered my troops as Toro's heavies began leaping behind me. "They're turning those turrets our way. Weaponeers, fly high and low out of the main column. Heavies, fly straight in. We're the targets. Sight on those turrets to see if you can get a clean shot." Using my command rig, I was able to red arrow targets. It was hardly necessary, as a line of orange-white sparks leaped from the enemy ship to our moving forces. They'd spotted us, and had turned their weapons our way to hose us down. Checking casualties, I saw grim tidings. 16 were dead, 20 more were flashing yellow, indicating some kind of damage sustained. Gritting my teeth, I took myself out of tactical chat and switched channels to talk on the command channel.
"Primus Graves," I said. "This is McGill reporting. We're in a bad way. There are clearly defenders, and about a quarter of my troops have been hit already."
"I can see that, McGill. Carry on. This was your idea. Failure is not an option."
"Roger that, sir. McGill out."
Switching out of every channel, I cursed for about 10 solid seconds. There wasn't much else I could do. My troops were flying toward the enemy ship in what seemed like slow motion. We weren't exactly sitting ducks, but we were slow-flying ducks that couldn't do so much as dodge or weave. Armored space suits aren't really built for that kind of thing. Splat! A round caught me in the right hip. It didn't penetrate my armor completely, but it did spin me around. I stabilized my flight trajectory and tried to get out of the line of fire, but it was hopeless. More orange-white sparks leaped up to greet me, zinging by either ear. It was unnerving. Judging by the look of the incoming fire, I figured it couldn't be energy-based. It had to be something ballistic, like a turret spraying out railgun rounds.
"McGill," Graves said, "you've got to stop that incoming fire. We're sustaining pinprick hull breaches all over Nostrum. If it doesn't stop, I'm authorized to employ our broadsides."
Whirling around so I could look back, I saw the big transport looming behind me. The tiny strikes were indeed spraying all over the midsection of the Nostrum's hull. Worse, I could see her broadsides now. They'd been uncovered and were rolling out into the open. 16 wicked-looking barrels moved to track us smoothly, or rather to track the enemy ship behind us. What I didn't get is why the gremlins didn't just fly away. They could have, but maybe they didn't recognize the danger. Up until now, we hadn't destroyed these little buggers because we'd figured they'd damage our warp core if we did. But at this point, the Legion Varus brass was getting anxious. They were pulling out the stops, and my unit was in the direct line of fire. "Graves, I'm requesting backup. Send the next unit in behind me."
"Negative, McGill. We're not going to lose another unit over this. If you can't break in, you're on your own."
Spinning back around again, I was in for a shock. I'd misgauged the distance and my speed of travel. I was right on top of the enemy ship. Turning my big metal feet toward the hull, I fired emergency retros. That worked, but not completely. After all, my suit was no space fighter. I landed with a grunt and a clang. Rolling, I clattered right across the skin of the ship. Inside the hull, it must have sounded like a meteor storm. It was a close thing. Rolling and out of control, I spun off the flat top of the craft and out into open space, still falling in the direction I'd been going before I ran into the ship. A line shot out and tagged me with magnetics. I was brought to a halt with a wrenching grunt. The techs reeled me in, and Natasha put her face into mine.
"You're hit, James?"
she asked.
"I'm okay. No serious damage. Get the rest of them."
She nodded and vanished. Struggling up into a crouch, I crawled over the hull. I saw blasted turrets. None of them were still shooting at my men, at least not on this side of the ship. On the far side, several turrets were chattering away at the men who'd missed the jump and were still tumbling out into space.
"Weaponeers!" Leeson shouted. "Crawl up over the top of the central fuselage. You're going to knock out every turret on this shit box of a ship."
"Belay that,"
I shouted in return. Leeson gaped at me.
What's the plan, Centurion?"
"Leeson, get your weaponeers to burn me a new hatch into this ship. You've got 30 seconds to breach her, that's it."
I pointed over my shoulder, and Leeson followed the gesture. He saw the broadsides then. They were open and sighted on our tail feathers. If those big guns fired, they'd take out this ship, our unit, everything. He grabbed up a wounded man's belcher, screaming orders at his confused men. There was no time to explain. Fortunately, Legion Varus troops are used to doing crazy things under fire. We beamed the hull until it glowed, started to spark with burning metal, then slagged and yawned open. A powerful gust of gas came blasting up into our faces. We rocked back, but our exoskeletal suits and magnetic boots held. We kept burning, widening the hole. The body of a gremlin, twisting and flipping as he spun, flew out of the hole like someone had shot him out of a cannon. Leeson chuckled, but our amusement was short-lived.
"McGill, that's it. I'm out of time," Graves warned. "Deech wants this operation to come to a close. If you jump off right now, some of you might survive the blast. But I doubt it."
"Hold on, sir, hold on," I shouted. "We're inside the ship. Repeat, we've breached the ship."
You're inside?
That's right, sir. Dead gremlins everywhere.
Get to the bridge and shut everything down. You've got 4 minutes, that's all.
Easy as cake, Primus.
Even as I spoke, I jumped into the breach and was swallowed up by the dark interior. Chapter 24. We'd surprised the little bastards. They'd known we were out here, but they didn't seem to be masterful at unit tactics. Quick as jumping cats, they sprang at us. Electric needles were rammed home, and 10 of my heavies did a final deadly jig. A dozen more were blown up by booby-trapped hatchways and doors that seemed to be fitted with blade-like jaws.
"You've got to jump through these doors. Lickety-split,"
Leeson said, panting and alarmed. He'd barely gotten through the last few.
"They do seem to be designed for gremlins," I agreed. "If you can't move like a gibbon, they'll shave your ass off for you."
We were walking in a crouch, another disadvantage, as we crept closer to the prow of the ship. The bridge had to be up there. It had to be. We'd chosen this path because it was the shortest, and with only a few minutes left, I didn't figure we had time to turn back and search the ship in the opposite direction. But when we got to the very nose cone, we found nothing. There was a storage facility, a few floating gremlins that apparently hadn't been smart enough to put on a vac suit, and that was about it. Leeson looked at me, and I looked at him.
90 seconds left, Centurion.
We're screwed.
Oh, come on, damn it, Leeson said. After we came all this way, where's that old McGill magic?
I thought hard for a second, then I looked at him.
Where are your weaponeers?
Outside in the hull. You can't really work a belcher in here, it's too long.
Right.
Have them follow your original plan. Knock out every turret, every light, any sign of life you see on the outer hull.
What good will that do?
60 seconds, Leeson.
He stopped asking questions, got on his platoon channel, and started shouting orders. At the same time, I contacted Graves.
Centurion, Graves said, I want to thank you and your team for giving it your all. But unfortunately, we just can't.
We took the ship, sir,
I shouted in triumph.
It was a close thing, but we did it.
But I see your men on the outer hull, firing on turrets.
Those men are mopping up, Primus. The turrets are independently operated. We haven't killed the power yet because we didn't want to damage critical systems. I'm hereby requesting you send the promised support. Text first, if you don't mind.
While I made this little speech, Leeson was looking at me with big eyes. I turned away to ignore him better. He was making it hard to concentrate.
All right, McGill, Graves said. I'll pass on that request. Graves out.
Centurion? Leeson hissed at me. Are you shitting me? We've got nothing here but a long slog. What if those techs get over here and...
Stop worrying so much, I told him. A pack of techs approved by Deech, they'll take an hour to get across to this ship.
Hell, they'll have tea first.
Yeah, maybe. But our reports, it's all there. Time stamped and vid filed to death. We're never going to...
Leeson was beginning to bother me.
Are you a moonlighting hog, or are you a Varus Legionnaire adjunct?
I demanded. That shut him down. Grumbling, he followed me into the depths of the ship.
Where, oh where, would a gremlin crew hide their bridge?
It turned out the bridge was in the back end of the ship, right on top of engineering. I suppose that with modern sensors, there was no real reason the bridge had to be in the forward zone of a vessel. Looking out through a window, especially in a starship, was a thing of the past. The gremlins really didn't put up much of a fight. They squeaked and hopped around. A few more men were charbroiled in nasty traps, but we got them all in the end. Toro said something about us being ordered to take prisoners, but I didn't like the idea. These guys were tricky. Back home, when there was a weasel or a rat in the henhouse, we never took prisoners. We eradicated the problem thoroughly. When it was over, I slumped on the deck in my armor, tired of bending over at the waist. My back was on fire with muscular pain, and my sore muscles sang me a little song of woe as I took in breaths of stale air and relaxed. In my limited field of vision, two faces came into view.
Are you injured, McGill?
Graves asked.
No, sir, I'm taking a break.
He chuckled, and he looked at Deech.
He was probably sleeping like a baby.
She seemed less happy. She kicked me, and although I hardly felt it through my heavy armor, my feelings were a little bit hurt. After all, to my mind, I was the hero of the hour.
"Where are my prisoners, McGill?"
she demanded. I pointed toward a corpse that floated past. "That one just twitched, I think." She kicked me again, and I sat up, frowning.
"Centurion,"
she said severely.
"Exactly how are we to bargain with the gremlins that hold our own engineering section now?"
"Same as before, sir, with the muzzle of my morph rifle."
"We tried that twice. It didn't work. If we go in with heavy weapons, we'll destroy the engines. How do we get home after that?"
I stretched. "Not sure, Tribune. I can't do everything around here. I don't want to be rude, but I feel I should point out that it was your idea to destroy this ship less than an hour ago. Now, at least we've got a captured vessel." Deitch heaved a sigh and stalked away, shaking her head. Graves crouched next to me, flicking at a floating gremlin corpse.
"You've sure got away with the ladies, McGill."
"That I do, sir."
The Tribune was hoping to bargain with the gremlin invaders. She'd hoped she could use prisoners to get them to give up.
"That's an interesting plan, sir," I said. "But in my opinion, it wouldn't have worked."
"I know I'm going to regret this, but I'm going to ask anyway. Why not?"
"Because I've taken my measure of these little freaks. They don't give one rip about each other. They enjoy a good trick, and that's about it. They're tiny, twisted psychopaths."
"You could well be right," he admitted. "But now we're not much better off than when we started."
Surprised, I lifted my hands to indicate our surroundings. "What? Sir, we've got ourselves a working vessel in prime condition right here. Sure, it's on the small side, but..." I trailed off as Graves walked away. Natasha came to kneel next to me after the brass left.
"Are you ready for a full report?"
she asked. "Is it good news?"
"Mostly."
"Okay, give it to me." She proceeded to rattle off facts and figures. Using our considerable damage control facilities back on Nostrum, she figured in a week's time this new ship would be ready for flight, even at warp. "How many humans could it carry?" I asked her. "That's what I really want to know." She gave me a quizzical look, but she answered promptly enough.
200 tops. If you want food and all that, cut that number in half."
I heaved a sigh and eased myself back against the bulkhead. I'd hoped the ship would hold a full cohort, but that was out of the question. We could take a single unit plus some auxiliaries. That's it. Wondering if I'd wasted a lot of lives and time capturing the gremlin ship, I kicked a floating body and smiled grimly. Nope, I decided. It had all been worth it, if only because none of these vicious weasels were grinning at me now. Chapter 25 Tribune Deitch soon completed her inspection. She wandered around the alien ship, sneering at everything.
"Were these creatures really so dangerous?"
she asked Graves.
"They took out more than their weight in humanity," he said. "I'd say they're still dangerous, as they're still holding our engine room hostage on Nostrum."
Deitch turned her unpleasant expression my way next.
"Centurion," she said, "as I understand it, you were in charge of this operation."
"That's right, sir. But I can't take all the credit. That should kick way, way up to the top, where you are." She twitched slightly when I said this, and I began to cement certain ideas I had about her mode of operation. Unlike Imperator Turov, who did everything to take credit for things she never did herself, Deitch played the rank game much more subtly. She delegated everything and only took credit when the smoke cleared. If it all went well and the mission was accomplished, I had no doubt she'd be the first in line back at Central to receive her accolades as Legion Varus's commander. But in case it all fell apart, she was working overtime every step of the way to distance herself. The fact she still wasn't happy to sign her name to this mess indicated to me that she wasn't at all confident the mission would succeed in the end. On that point, we were in 100% agreement. Despite my inner thoughts, I grinned at her in triumph. I hammed it up, playing the role of the happy soldier who just scored a touchdown. She gave me tight-lipped smiles and tiny nods of encouragement, but that was all. Shaking my fist overhead and whooping, I limped aboard the shuttle she'd brought over from Nostrum and plopped down in the VIP section up front. The pilot looked over her shoulder at me for a minute, but then she shrugged. What did she care if the brass didn't want me on their couch? It was going to be my ass if they got pissed off. By the time Deitch and Primus Graves finished their little tour and joined me on the shuttle, I was sound asleep. Graves kicked my blood-crusted boots off the couch and sat down next to me.
What?
I said, startled. My hand slid away from my pistol as I recognized Graves and Deitch.
Oh, it's you, sirs. What's the verdict? Is she a prize or what?
I made sure I injected all kinds of enthusiasm and excitement into that question. Neither one of them appeared to be as happy as I was.
It's too damn small,
Graves said. Deitch nodded grimly.
There's no way around it, she said. This ship is no more than a lifeboat. It's not salvation.
Salvation? I asked.
Why, hell, our problems are as good as solved.
They both looked annoyed. Neither believed me, I could tell.
McGill, Graves said, the enemy holds our engine room. We've gained no valid escape route by taking their assault ship. Essentially, we're back where we started.
Nonsense, I boomed. We've got them by the short ones.
Why do you keep talking like that? Deitch demanded. I know you're not as retarded as you pretend to be, McGill. Can't you see our situation is grim?
We hold all the cards, Tribune. Just let me go back into the engine room and clean them out. They've got nowhere to hide now.
She winced at the idea.
If only you'd taken prisoners, we could have talked them out of their position and arrested them.
I shook my head slowly. I don't think so, Tribune. These tiny buggers are determined, and they don't seem to give much of a rip about each other. They might have run in fear if we'd slaughtered more of them in close proximity, but then again, maybe not. She looked at me and sighed.
All right, she said at last. I'll bite. What do you think would work to get them out of there and off my ship?
Death, I said, grinning at her. Mass death. For all of them.
We tried that, McGill, Graves said. We went in, and we were driven right back out again, those of us that survived.
Right, I said. But we didn't know this enemy very well yet. Now we've got a lot of troops who've faced them. More importantly, you went in with all your troops in light gear, Primus. In my opinion, that was a mistake.
Graves gave me a blank look, but his eyes slid once toward Deitch, then back again. I knew exactly what that meant. It was her idea to go in without armor. Probably Graves had asked for heavier equipment and been denied. Deitch, for her part, looked like she smelled manure. But she wasn't shooting me down, not yet.
You see, sirs, I continued,
I've benefited from several engagements with this enemy. I think belchers and armor are essential to defeating them. You couldn't have known that when you fought them. Just as I didn't know I'd get fried on an electric needle when I first met up with these nasty little midgets.
Graves glanced toward Deitch. He wasn't playing my game. I'd wanted to keep talking to him like he'd made all the previous mistakes, but he'd brought her back into it by looking at her for a response.
Go on, McGill, she said, rubbing her temples. I'm listening.
Well, that's pretty much it. We'll march in with a full unit of armored heavies, taking along techs and weaponeers to back us up. We'll clean them out, even if we have to use force blades to stick every last one of them.
Deitch sucked in a breath and let it out again.
Disaster,
she said.
We'll perforate the hull and the core for sure. You do realize that a warp drive system is delicate, don't you, McGill?
I can only assume it is, but this time we'll hit them from a fresh angle with better gear. It can't miss.
They both looked at me curiously.
What's this about a fresh angle? Centurion.
Oh, didn't I mention that part? I want to play the same trick I did here on this ship. I want to drill in through the hull. I've been looking at the schematics.
No, Deitch said. You'll rupture the cooling jacket for sure.
Now hold on. I had Natasha take a look at the blueprints, and there are a few ways through the unshielded part.
She blinked at me.
Those blueprints are classified.
Never mind, she said.
Let's say I give you the troops, the armor, and Primus Graves here approves the plan. Can you guarantee me we'll have our ship back and with a working engine?
I clapped my gauntlets together so loudly they made an ear-splitting pop that caused Deitch to jump in her seat.
Hot damn, I said.
Of course I can, sir. Are we on for Operation B?
B. What was Operation A?
Tilting my head, I indicated Graves. He gave me a wry look in return.
Oh, right, Deitch said. Primus Graves, I'm going to give you a second shot.
You're in command of this attempt to regain your reputation as the best of the best.
Work with McGill. Take that engine room back for me.
That's right, sirs, I said excitedly. Use me like a spear. I'll prong these flea-sized devils right off our ship.
Graves rubbed his right temple briefly, but he nodded.
Of course, I'll personally take operational command. McGill, you'll march into the lion's den.
One thing, Deitch said, giving me a stern look. No explosives. No using your morph rifles with armor-penetrating rounds for anything. Nothing can pierce those walls, McGill. The cooling jacket can't be ruptured, or we'll all die out here.
I wouldn't dream of doing anything dangerous like that, Tribune. You have my solemn word.
We landed aboard Nostrum a few minutes later, and Graves hung back as Tribune Deitch strode away toward Gold Deck.
She's marching out of here damn fast, I commented. If I didn't know better, I'd think her butt was on fire.
McGill, Graves said, did you really have to throw me under the bus like that?
Damn straight I did. I even had to back my rig over your corpse a few extra times to make sure. Did you notice?
I did, now that you mention it.
You see, sir, I think I'm getting a handle on old Deitch. She wants her wins to come clean and her losses to come even cleaner. She'd never have approved this operation if she thought there was a snowball's chance in hell she'd ever get the loss of Nostrum attached to her career.
He looked me over suspiciously.
You don't think that's a realistic possibility, do you?
I did a shocked act, throwing back my head and putting up my hands.
Why, no, sir. No way. That's not even in the cards. Never was.
He walked away, shaking his head. I followed.
How long do you need to prep for another assault? He asked.
Well, sir, looking at the estimates, I'd say we could be ready to go in 6 hours.
You've got 90 minutes. At that point, according to Blue Deck, all your troops will have been revived. Don't waste it.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Thank you. You won't regret this at all. That's my heartfelt promise.
Stow it, McGill. Save it for the ladies.
He walked away, and I got down to work. I had a lot to do and nowhere near enough time to pull it off.
Chapter 26 Harris glowered at the loadout. I just informed him each of his troops was going to have to carry a grenade.
But Centurion, he said, my people are trained to be light troopers. We're not demolition experts.
My hands came up, making a cautionary motion. I gave him a shushing noise as well. All this only served to make him glower more. He smelled a big Georgia rat, and we both knew he was right.
Look, I said, we're not going to even mention these grenades to anyone. We're just going to carry them. Your light troops will go in first all at once. When we get inside, I'll be right behind you with my heavies to mop up.
Harris's face was unhappy-looking most of the time, but today his expression had reached a new low.
You're asking me to suicide my platoon, aren't you, sir? That's the bottom line, isn't it?
I heaved a sigh, looked at the ceiling for a moment, then looked him in the eye.
Yes, I told him. The weaponeers will drill through the hull.
Your lights will bounce down there, bypassing the traps in the central passages. But I'm assuming we'll hit hard resistance and—
Excuse me, Harris said. But I didn't really hear anything you said after the word yes. That kind of threw me down the well.
I understand, Adjunct, I said. And I wouldn't be asking you for this sacrifice if I thought there was any other way.
He stared at the computer scroll we'd ironed out between us. The blueprints glowed with force lines and planned angles of attack.
All right, he said. I'll do it. But I'm going to turn state's evidence on you when this turns into the shit show I'm expecting.
Not good enough.
Say what?
This is bound to be a mess, I said. I want you to keep your mouth shut, by which I mean handing in a candied-up after-action report if we retake the ship.
He stared at me with squinting eyes for a second.
All right. If, and I mean if, this damn ship can still fly us out of here afterward. I'm down for lying my ass off.
Good enough. We didn't shake on it. We didn't even smile. We just parted ways, both of us muttering about what a dick the other guy was. But I didn't care. This whole thing was a Hail Mary op to begin with. If I didn't retake this ship, I had a feeling Deitch was going to climb aboard that tiny captured vessel with a few of her biggest ass-kissers and all our whiskey.
She'd let Nostrum blow up or turn into a museum full of legionnaires and ditch Varys entirely.
No doubt when she got back to Earth, I'd be given the starring role of the village idiot in her deposition. I'd been set up by people who were better at it than Deitch, and I had no intention of taking it quietly this time. 78 minutes after our little talk aboard the shuttle, I found myself exiting a hatchway and clanking over the aft hull toward the engines. Behind me, over 100 others followed. They were pretty sullen, even for Legion Varys troops. They knew the score. They'd been taken out of the revival machines and thrown right back into the grinder. Normally, after a hard battle, a unit was allowed 24 hours for R&R before they were placed back into the pit. There were only two possible reasons for such an unusually quick redeployment. One, it was punishment by the higher-ups for failure. Two, the unit commander was crazy. They'd all selected option number two, and I wasn't even bothering to deny it. All right, I said. Adjunct Harris, distribute the special devices. Glumly, he began pulling plasma grenades out of a huge extra pack he'd been lugging along. He handed these out, one at a time, to each of his light troopers. Sarah, a girl I'd gotten to know rather well back on Rogue World, stared at hers in dismay.
But, sir, these aren't generally supposed to be used in confined spaces. If we all—
That's right, troops, Harris boomed. We've all got an extra special present under our pillows, courtesy of Centurion McGill.
So saying, he took his own grenade, the last one, and held it high for his entire platoon to see.
You know what Solstice troops do with these? He asked them. They activate them, then dive or roll under a hard target, and boom!
He grinned at them, seeming to enjoy their dismay. Now, now, I said, waving them to silence. I'm not asking for mass suicide. Not exactly. But these little guys we're about to meet up with, well, they're tricky. I think we all know that. Some of us might find ourselves incapacitated or otherwise in a hopeless situation. If you think you're in exactly that kind of circumstance, I want you to get some revenge out of it. The light troopers looked sick. No one talked. Carlos broke the spell.
These are butt plugs, right, sir? Maybe Harris's light troopers should practice with them first?
I'm going to demonstrate on you, Ortiz, Harris told him.
Enough! Positions, everyone!
We exited from the aft portal and marched over the hull of the ship. We weren't subtle. You could have heard us clanking along on magnetic boots all the way up to gold deck. When we reached the stretch of hull we were supposed to drill through, I signaled Leeson. His weaponeers lit up the spot where we were going to try to break through. Carlos took that brief delay as an opportunity to talk to me.
These sorry bastards, he said. You're really giving it to them this time, aren't you, McGill?
They're light troops, Carlos, I said. You know the drill. They've got to prove themselves to rate heavy gear.
What you mean is, they're expendable. I get that.
But you might want to consider how they'll remember this betrayal in the future. They aren't total fuckwits. At least, not all of them. They know the score. I looked at him. Are you volunteering to jump down that burning hole with them, Specialist Ortiz? I asked, pointing to the molten metal in the middle of the weaponeers. Because if you are, mark me down as impressed. That's mighty big of you.
No, 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 no!
He backed away and stopped bugging me after that. This wasn't the time to put doubts into the commander's mind, but Carlos rarely understood such moments. If a thought came into his head, he was practically forced to puke it out his mouth 1 second later.
"Breach!"
Sargon roared. "Widen it out!" I shouted. "Harris, drop an egg!" He tossed a grenade into the hole, and the weaponeers cursed, ducking. After the brilliant, silent flash lit up the interior for a brief second, they went back to work, burning around the edges. When it was big enough to let a light trooper in, Harris grabbed the one standing nearest to him and tossed her inside. Then he waved his platoon forward, wildly pinwheeling his arms. A dozen troops rushed down, and soon a full squad. He halted the flow and crouched beside me, waiting. We saw more blue-white flashes, two of them.
"They're meeting heavy resistance not 50 meters from the breach," Harris said.
I checked the casualty list in my helmet. 9 names were red already.
"Crap," I said quietly. "Take your second squad down."
He stood and began to signal his squad to advance, but I shook my head and gave him a kick in the butt. When a heavy trooper nails a light trooper with a boot that weighs a good 20 kilos, it hurts. Harris got the message. He took the lead, jumping into the white-hot, spark-spitting hole. The rest of his troops followed in a rush. The battle was on. Chapter 27 The moment Harris's group was all down, I prepared to jump after them with the heavy squads, but Leeson touched my arm. "Suggestion, Centurion, let the light people do their jobs first." Our eyes met in the cold, glittering light of the stars. He was dead serious. I knew what he meant. The light troopers served several critical mission roles in any legion. They were capable snipers and skirmishers in a wide-open land battle, but when you were in tight, fighting house to house or bulkhead to bulkhead in a boarding action like this one, well, they were best used to flush the enemy from their hiding spots. That meant they tended to die a lot, suffering the greatest casualties so that the more expensively armed heavies and specialists didn't take the initial losses. It was the rude calculus of modern warfare. In Legion Varus, troops were almost as expendable as magazines of ammo. We essentially had an endless supply of protoplasm to convert into manpower. Hell, we could even recycle the dead and churn them out to fight again. Weapons, armor, and specialized equipment was another thing. We didn't have an easy way to manufacture more of any of that stuff. Taking a half step back, I waited. It was hard to do. I'd been the point man on many rough invasion missions just like the one Harris was engaged in today. Light troops always felt vulnerable and damn near panicked when they fought in close quarters. Death was right around every corner, and if the enemy didn't get you, your own buddy with a grav grenade might just do the trick. Even as I had that thought, I saw 3 more blue-white flashes go off silently inside the ruptured hull. Moments later, more names flickered from green to yellow to a dull red. Half the light troopers had died in the first 4 minutes of fighting.
"Harris," I called. "I can see you're still alive down there. Report."
"Centurion, sir," he said. "We could use some support. We'd taken 2 chambers and the connecting passage, but we're bogged down now."
"Have you made it to the engines?"
"Negative, sir. We're pinned by defensive fire right where..."
"Well, get yourself unpinned. I'm sending in a squad of heavies. Toro will lead them personally. McGill out."
Looking around, I finally spotted Toro. She was looking small in the midst of her second squad. I beckoned, and she tramped forward reluctantly.
"Adjunct Toro, you're going to take point and lead your squad to support Harris."
She looked sullen.
"Harris is still alive in that shit?"
To accent her comment, another blue-white flash went off. "He's having tea in the aft maintenance shaft. You've got 15 seconds to get your first and last man down this hole."
Toro didn't say anything else. She didn't have time. She gritted her teeth and jumped into the hole. Dutifully, her heavy troopers rushed after her, vanishing one after another like an army of tin-plated gophers. That's what Varys' troops were usually like. Surly, argumentative, but willing to die when their orders were clear. I'd watched other legions operate differently. I suppose it was an outfit-to-outfit cultural thing. Solstice troops, for example, were like kamikazes. They prided themselves on self-sacrifice and roughing it in general. The Iron Eagles, where Deitch was from, were famously professional. They were elite, and they didn't like to get dirty. Varys' people were the best and worst you could have with you. We were inventive, tenacious, and resilient. It had been noted that a Varys unit was more likely to break than others, but at the same time, we were quicker to rally and return to the fight. I thought that had to do with our volatile, independent spirit. After Toro was in the game, the fighting intensified. I could see casualties, troop concentrations, and icons flaring when troops fired, but it wasn't the same thing. Getting antsy, I stepped forward and led the second heavy squadron of Toro's platoon into the breach. They were anxious to get into the fight. I couldn't blame them. It was hard to stand around on the roof, listening to the battle without participating. Landing with a whirr of my motor-enhanced knees, I advanced in a crouch toward Harris and Toro. Before I could get to their positions, however, Harris's name blinked red. "Shit," I said, picking up the pace. I called for a report, but I didn't get anything intelligible. Coming around a bend in the corridor, I saw a gruesome scene. Harris was stretched out, face down, and dead. Half a dozen others surrounded him in a similar state, including several heavies. He had a grav grenade in his hand, but it hadn't gone off. Could they have hit us with some kind of EMP? I wasn't sure. Toro was still in the game, but she was clearly experiencing a counterattack. A dozen gremlins with spear-like sticks were encircling her. She used her force blades to slash at them defensively. "McGill!" she called out, thrusting this way and that to force the gremlins to back off. "They've got some kind of new weapon. One touch and your armor will lock up on you." "Set your morph rifles a full auto," I ordered. "Light rounds. Let's hose them down." The heavies around me halted and adjusted their weapons. Of all standard Earth armament, I thought morph rifles were possibly the best. They could be used in a variety of ways, and they hit a lot harder than snap rifles did. We must have sent 1,000 rounds downrange over the next 10 seconds. Gremlins were torn apart, despite all their leaping around and dodging. There just wasn't anywhere to hide. The last two must have realized they were as good as dead. They took the plunge, hurling themselves at Toro, who was in a defensive stance. One blade was held high, protecting her head and upper body, while the other was hanging low to cover her legs. Rushing in from two angles, Toro thrust high and caught one, but the second midget got in low, stabbing his spear tip into her steel-clad ankles. She had a seizure, or at least that's what it looked like. Moving in random jerks for a few seconds, she toppled onto the floor and died. "Double check," I told the heavy squad as we advanced. "I want them all dead, all of them." No gremlins hopped back up to their feet to challenge us. We brought in Leeson specialists, and the bio people knelt beside every casualty on our side.
"It's no good," Carlos told me. "Our troops are all dead."
"Centurion," Natasha said, moving up to my side. "I've got bad news."
"What?"
Leeson grabbed her computer from her hands and shoved it at me. That earned him a glare from Natasha, but he seemed immune to such things. Looking it over, I began to curse.
"That's right," Leeson said. "We punctured the cooling jacket about 700 times.
"It must have been the grav grenades," Natasha said. "That's the only thing I can think of. The density of the debris down here is perfect for shrapnel. These walls, they're kind of thin, James."
As she spoke, the chamber slowly filled with a frosty-looking gas. It was a thick, artificial fog, like something made using dry ice.
"Natasha," I said, "get every tech and light trooper alive to start patching these holes. Leeson, take the rest of Toro's heavies and sweep the deck. Hunt down the last of these gremlins, but use force blades. Do not puncture the jacket and make it worse."
"I'll try," he said,
and he rounded up troops to advance deeper into the ship's aft section.
"What are you going to do, McGill?"
Carlos asked.
"Make some gremlin stew?"
"I'm going to call Deech and ask for help."
"Ouch. When she finds out what you did to her ship, she's going to be pissed."
"Stop jawing about it. Grab some patches from Natasha and find one of these pinprick holes. If that doesn't work, use your dick." Sensing I wasn't in a happy mood, Carlos scooted away. After a moment's hesitation, I made the call to Gold Deck. Chapter 28 Deech herself didn't answer. Instead, Winslade intercepted my call.
"What's your status, McGill?"
"It's all clear down here, Primus. Just a little mopping up to do. Please send in the damage control teams."
"All clear or mopping up? Which is it?"
"Does it matter? We need the crew in here right now. Send all those crewmen you've been reviving since the initial boarding. I know you've been hoarding them in the upper decks." Winslade was quiet for a second. I thought I heard him using his tapper.
"We've been watching your vid feed when we can," he said. "But those creatures jammed most of our signals and..." "Oh, good Lord. Are you kidding me, McGill? I'm detecting gas releases, high humidity, and radiation."
"Primus, please listen to me. If you want to see Earth again this century, you'll send me every repairman you've got, pronto." Winslade made a hissing sound with his teeth.
"She'll know. We'll never.
It doesn't matter. We're all screwed if you don't act now." I would have said more, but Winslade had closed the channel. I turned back to the aftermath. Sargon came up to me, pointing down the passage toward a closed hatch.
"Centurion, we got most of them, but our senses indicate there are more behind the hatchway. It's sealed and booby-trapped."
"Where does the hatch lead?"
"Aft storage and machine shop."
"Ignore it," I told him. "For now, we've got to secure the engines and the cooling system. Place four guards here, and at every other exit they might be able to breach." He trotted off, clanking and jingling in his armor. At least he wasn't giving me a lecture. Graves led the relief team through the main hatchway. It was hanging at an odd angle, and the interior of the passage behind it had a spider web of tripwires. They took the easy way out and used grenades to clear it, but that didn't make me happy. Every blue-white flash made me wince.
"Ho-ho," Leeson said, chuckling at me. "So now you're worried about explosions, huh?"
I gave him an angry stare, and he shut up. A moment later, I saw him with patches looking for leaks with an ultraviolet emitter.
"McGill," Graves boomed as he walked in. "This is a mess."
"Well, sir," I said, forcing a cheery expression, "you've got to break some eggs to make an omelet." A crowd of techs, mostly crewmen who'd been killed here by the gremlins in the first place, spread out and started repairing everything they could. They were soon shouting and becoming increasingly agitated as they worked.
"Throughout this battle, McGill," Graves told me, "I've been sweating in the passages outside. We couldn't track your progress due to the gremlin jamming, but we saw the flashes. You used grenades, didn't you?"
"Maybe a few. But I saw you use them too when you broke in." He looked at me.
"The cooling jacket doesn't extend this far forward. You were fighting right in the middle of the engine compartment, right up against the core."
"Yeah, you're right." Walking deeper into the passages with his hands on his hips, he examined the damage. Soon he was muttering. About a minute later, he was cursing. Finally, he turned on me.
"This is catastrophic. The cooling jacket only has so much liquid in it, McGill. Are you aware of that?"
I guess that makes sense. What are we down to?"
60%.
"Still over half full, huh? Not bad."
"No, it is bad. This isn't a fuel tank. The core is already overheating."
"Can we, shut it down? Let the pile cool down for a bit?"
"No,"
said another voice. Natasha walked up to join us.
"These drives aren't built to do that kind of thing. They're always on, always running. Part of the containment field must be kept alive and fully aligned. If it's switched off completely or knocked out of alignment, we're screwed. We'd have to rebuild it at a dockyard to get it working again."
I said, "could you define screwed in this context?"
"Certainly,"
she said, crossing her arms.
It will either overload and blow up, melt down and blow up, or fuse into a solid block of molten radioactives and never work again.
That does sound bad, I admitted.
McGill,
Graves said, rejoining the conversation, you assured us that this wouldn't happen. You stated you could retake engineering without disabling the ship.
Yeah, I do recall saying something like that.
What are we going to do if the ship is marooned halfway to Epsilon Leporis?
Hold a trial and perm me?
That's an excellent idea. I'll forward that to Deitch.
Graves turned around and marched away angrily. I guess there's just no satisfying some people, I commented to Sargon, who'd come down the crowded passageway to talk to me.
Sir, I don't think the Gremlin jammers have been switched off yet. I've been trying to contact you.
They probably aren't. Everyone with two thumbs left is patching holes in the cooling system.
Well, sir, we've got a pack of bio people trying to get past my men, remember? You left us on guard.
You mean at the aft hatch? Into the machine shop?
That's right. Let's go.
I followed him back to the ship toward the less wrecked part of the engineering deck. There I found a group of gawking troops in armor and a dozen bio people carrying tanks and nozzles. What's up, Centurion? I asked Thompson, who I'd assumed was in command. She turned around to stare at me. Wincing, I showed my teeth for a second.
Sorry, I forgot they took your bars, Specialist Thompson. What can I do for you?
At least someone remembers I was an officer once, she said. We've got orders from Deitch, McGill. We're going in there with knockout gas. Can your troops provide cover?
I don't think that's such a good idea. These little monkeys will tear you apart.
Not if they're unconscious.
I looked at her gear and shrugged. All right. Go for it. But they have pressure suits of their own, you know. There's no reason to think they won't be wearing their nasty little helmets.
We've got a plan for that. The techs built it for us.
She showed me a device with a bulbous tip and a thin shaft of metal.
Just open up the hatch a few centimeters. We'll do the rest.
I nodded to Sargon's men, and I stood back a bit, watching curiously. Sargon looked at me for a moment, then hastened to stand at my side at a safe distance. The hatch creaked open. Thompson took her lollipop thing and tossed it into the crack. Her team followed by shoving in hoses. We could hear a hissing sound as she spun the valves open on the tanks. Once this part of the deck had been repressurized, we could see a wisp of gas coming back in through the crack.
Did you ever?
Sargon asked as he watched Thompson work.
Nah, I said. She hates me.
That never stopped you before. Mind you, she's kind of on the thin side.
Hold on.
Whoa! I said in alarm. I'd caught sight of a small hand holding Thompson's metal lollipop. It eased the object back through the crack at the bottom and dropped it on our side again with a tiny clicking sound. One, two, that's as many steps as I managed. I had my arms extended, my visor slammed shut, but I was too late. The lollipop thing was a mini grenade. It grabbed up tiny particles of broken glass, grit, even water droplets from condensation. Hurling these outward in a blue-white flash, they pierced the pressure suits of every bio on Thompson's team. Then the gas began to flow back onto our side in earnest. How were they doing that? I didn't know, but I was certain these gremlins were the trickiest people I'd ever had the misfortune of encountering. Thompson dropped first. I'm not sure why. Maybe it was because she was closer to the hatchway than the rest of them. Maybe the gas was lighter than air, and since she was standing instead of crouching, she got a snoot full first. Whatever the case, the gremlins had managed to reverse the flow of the gas and send it right back into the passage with us. One of Sargon's heavies hit the deck a moment later. I was alarmed, thinking that somehow this stuff could penetrate armor, but then I saw he'd stupidly had his visor up. That left me, Sargon, and two other heavies at the hatchway. Sargon advanced, growling. He had his morph rifle unslung and ready. I could tell he was planning to wipe the gremlins out once and for all. Putting my hand on his rifle, I pushed it down to aim at the deck. Thompson says she was following Deitch's orders. I'm in enough trouble already.
You want I should go in there with a butterfly net?
Hmm, I said, kneeling and searching Thompson's pockets. I found two more lollipop things. Standing, I threw open the hatch, tossed them into the midst of the scattering gremlins, and waited to the count of three. At the last moment, I figured the gremlins might have figured out they were in trouble. They came bouncing at us in a knot. There must have been at least 10 of them. Still, I didn't let my man fire. Instead, I opened up the knockout gas and watched it hiss, creating a cloud. The tiny bombs went off, and the gremlins had their suits shot through with holes. They fell, a moment later, into tiny heaps all over the deck.
"Nice," Sargon said. "I would like to have killed them myself. I still could."
"Nope," I said.
"Just one, sir? My boots are wide, and I could have an accident. Who could blame me? I hate these things."
Shaking my head, I set the local vents to exhaust. The air was quickly sucked out of the chamber. The sleeping forms quivered, choking. Before they could suffocate, I closed the vents again.
"Get a bucket or something," I said.
"I'm taking these up to Deitch personally." In the end, it took 5 buckets. The gremlins were a pretty good size. Carrying a load of buckets with outstretched arms, I marched down the passages and right out of engineering. I moved fast in case the little frigger sleeping in their buckets started to wake up. Before they did, I made my way to Gold Deck. Shocked looks only begins to describe what I received when I brought my prizes to Deitch's office. Many a non-com would have stopped me if I hadn't insisted I was following the Tribune's direct orders. Not having a free hand, I used my boot on the door. After the 3rd kick, she opened the door irritably. Whatever comment she'd had in mind faded away when she saw me in my buckets.
"What are you doing, Centurion?"
Deitch demanded. "Specialist Thompson asked me to bring these gremlins to you personally, sir." She looked into the nearest bucket and wrinkled her nose.
"Take these nasty beasts to Blue Deck. They've set up an enclosure."
All right. But they do know these guys are tricky, right? They're people, not animals. Smart people."
"The personnel on Blue Deck have been briefed."
Turning away, I began to march off. But Deitch called me back.
"Thank you for following my orders in this instance, McGill," she said.
"All your superior officers assured me you would slaughter these creatures, defying my instructions." "I'd never do that, sir. Jealous stories about my rebellious nature have always been overblown by my detractors."
"I see," she said. "You did get the job done again, didn't you? First, the assault on the enemy ship, then the engine deck, and now this. It defies logic that persons like Winslade would complain about you so much."
"Makes no sense at all."
"Very well. Dismissed. I thought I saw one of your charges twitch. You'd better hurry."
Alarmed at the idea of being turned into a tree by a pack of gremlins, I rushed to Blue Deck. The bio people had me deposit them all into a holding cell for people who'd been classified as bad grows and thanked me. After that, I returned to engineering. Before I reached the blown-wide hatch, I met up with Specialist Thompson coming the other way.
"What did you do with my specimens, McGill?"
Thompson demanded.
"If you jettisoned all of them, so help me—"
"Hold on," I said. "Have you forgotten I outrank you now?" She looked startled. She was rubbing her face and her neck. The knockout gas had clearly taken its toll.
I'm sorry, sir. What happened to the gremlins?"
"I tried to give them to Deitch, but she sent me down to Blue Deck with them."
"Oh," Thompson said. "Thanks. How did you catch them in the end?"
I explained, and she looked sheepish.
"I should have been on guard. I feel foolish."
"It's all right," I said. "If no one knows you're a fool, then you aren't one. Not really." She seemed amused by this philosophy, but she didn't argue with it. Deciding it was about time I checked on my unit, I moved to push past her, but she put a gentle hand on my arm.
"I've treated you unfairly," she said, "for years. I apologize, McGill, for what that's worth."
"Why, thank you, Specialist." My eyes tracked her as she made her way down the hall. She was skinny, just as Sargon had said, but she was kind of cute anyway. Better than that, her attitude had improved drastically. It might have been the lingering effects of the gas, but she seemed nicer today than she'd ever been. Something, call it bad genetics, made me walk a few steps after her and call out,